morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about the streetwear brand Supreme, Whitefish-based Pottersfield Ministries, and record grizzly bear killings. It's Monday, December 2nd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana Governor Steve Bullock announced today that he's ending his Democratic presidential campaign, saying it's become clear that he won't have a shot at being his party's nominee. The two-term governor and former state attorney general tried to make the case that he was the best bet to beat President Donald Trump because he was the only Democratic candidate to win in a state that Trump won in 2016. But he got a late start, announcing his candidacy in May and joining nearly two dozen other Democratic candidates competing for attention and campaign donations. Bullock said in a statement, quote, "While there were many obstacles we could not have anticipated when entering this race, it has become clear that in this moment I won't be able to break through to the top tier of this still crowded field of candidates," unquote. The governor said that he ran to win back places Democrats have lost and end the influence of dark money in politics. The 53-year-old struggled to raise money and register in the polls, managing to meet qualification thresholds for only one Democratic National Committee debate in July. Democrats have been pushing Bullock to give up his presidential bid and instead run for Senate, where first-term Republican Steve Daines is running for re-election. But Bullock has consistently and repeatedly said he has no interest in the Senate seat and that there are already strong candidates running against Daines. Bullock's spokesperson reiterated that today, saying, quote, "While he plans to work hard to elect Democrats in state and across the country in 2020, it will be in his capacity as a governor and a senior voice in the Democratic Party, not as a candidate for U.S. Senate," unquote. Bullock had been exploring a presidential run since 2017, but he said he couldn't announce his candidacy until he had finished his work in Helena, where the state legislature was meeting. The big New York streetwear brand Supreme often sees counterfeiters knock off its designs. Now, it's being sued in a claim for doing just that. A Montana company says Supreme copied their original camouflage print, Olivia Rheingold reports.
Oh my god, I need these.
Yo, this is so sweet.
The box logo is so freaking beautiful.
Those are reactions on YouTube to a recent Supreme collection of hoodies and other casual pieces of clothing. It's a brand valued at $1 billion and worn by celebrities like Madonna and Justin Bieber. Usually Supreme is the one suing in copyright lawsuits against other companies that use its trademarked red logo, but now it's the defendant in a suit brought by a Stevensville-based company, ASAT Outdoors, a clothing company that specializes in hunting gear. The company says Supreme replicated their copyrighted camo print.
I'm doing a story about camo.
Looking at the designs side by side, veteran hunter Dan Hollingworth says there's hardly a difference.
Yeah, it's very close, probably. It'd be a toss-up.
Hollingworth gets together with a group of guys every Wednesday in the back of a gun shop in Billings to talk about firearms and hang out.
It's a nicely balanced old weapon.
They all agree the patterns look alike, with a tan background and overlapping black lines that look like antlers. There is such a thing as urban camouflage, and it's not this. So Hollingworth doesn't get why people in cities wear camo when they're not hunting.
We couldn't hide in Fifth Avenue and Broadway in New York in an outfit like that. Every cop in town would be looking at you like you were three-headed hydra.
ASAT's website says the pattern, which it's had copyrighted for over three decades, was designed for animal eyes, not human ones. A promotional video says what makes it different from other camos is how tan it is, not green.
How many times have you seen a deer and had that same deer vanish before your very eyes? Do they have any green in their camouflage? No, they're tan, brown, and black, just like ASAT.
The company sells its jackets and pants to stores like Walmart and Overstock.com. In the lawsuit filed earlier this month in the Southern District of New York, ASAT says Supreme infringed upon its design willfully, intentionally, and purposefully. The Montana company is now asking Supreme to hand over profits they made from selling their similar-looking design. Supreme, which did not respond to YPR's request for comment, released its camo designs as part of their current fall and winter collection. The brand sold jackets, pants, sweaters, and hats with the pattern it called Tribal Camo. Other big fashion brands like Italian clothing company Valentino have also put out camo-heavy collections this year. Hollingworth, the Billings Hunter, says it doesn't matter if it's a trend. The only time he's wearing camo is when he's out hunting. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Olivia Reingold is Yellowstone Public Radio's Report for America Corps member. More than a foot of fresh snow and strong wind gusts are expected to combine to create ground blizzard conditions along the Rocky Mountain front in northern Montana. The National Weather Service says the blizzard warnings begin at 9 p.m. Saturday and run through tomorrow morning in areas including Browning and Hart Butte on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation. Meteorologist Christian Castle told the Great Falls Tribune people could be stuck in their homes for at least a day due to the near-zero visibility. The Glacier County Sheriff's Office posted the warning on its Facebook page, noting the possible 60-mile-per-hour wind gusts. It advises residents to stock up on groceries and firewood, and, quote, maybe a backlog of new memes you haven't read yet, unquote. It closes with an emphatic request to stay off the roads during the blizzard. Whitefish-based Potter's Field Ministries says it no longer intends to permanently close its doors. The ministry ceased much of its operations this summer following allegations of psychological and emotional abuse. The ministry also faces allegations that it skirted state and federal labor laws. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Potter's Field released a statement on its website that it intends to reorganize the ministry rather than shut down. The ministry closed all of its affiliated Mudman Burger restaurants in the Flathead Valley this summer and shut down its ministry training school and internship program. All that's left open is a donation program that helps feed children in impoverished countries. In-house counsel Sharon DeMiro says the ministry initially intended to hand off the donor program to another nonprofit and shut down. But she says both nonprofits that make up the ministry need to stay open for at least 2 years.
They have to stay long enough for people to bring civil suits. And that's a 2-year statute of limitations, so you can't just dissolve them, wave your magic wand and dissolve them.
No lawsuits have been filed so far. In its online statement, Potter's Field also says its board chair, Rob McCoy, will be stepping down. McCoy came in to help the ministry shut down after leaders Mike and Pam Rozelle backed away from day-to-day operations. The Rozelles are named in many allegations the ministry faces. They have not spoken publicly and are directing all questions to DeMiro. DeMiro says the Rozelles still maintain their spots on the board and will help guide the reorganization of the ministry.
For right now, it's not broken. There's no need to fix it. So we're just keeping it as it is. And we're brainstorming, is there other ways to bring money in?
DeMiro doesn't think the ministry will be quite as big as it once was, but former Potter's Field workers fear that's exactly what will happen. Kenzie Kinney, who attended the ministry's missionary school and worked at its Mudman restaurants, says she almost threw up when she read this week's statement.
In that moment, felt like nothing was going to be changed, nothing was going to be different, and they were still just going to do whatever they wanted.
However, Kinney thinks that local media coverage of allegations against Potter's Field and ongoing investigations by the Montana Department of Labor and Industry will prevent the ministry from making a full-scale comeback.
I feel like that this community is so strong together and so supportive, and I feel like that bridge is just burned.
The State Labor Department is still investigating agreements Potter's Field had young adults it called interns sign. The agreements asked them to work 60 or more hours per week, with some of those hours being volunteered. The agreements may violate state and federal labor laws. If Potter's Field becomes liable for the claims, it could shell out nearly $120,000 in unpaid wages. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Data indicates federal subsidies distributed to Montana farmers to offset losses resulting from U.S. trade wars have increased to more than $114 million. The Billings Gazette reports subsidies issued in October pushed the value of 2019 payments to about $92.4 million, while the state received about $22.1 million in 2018 subsidies. The Market Facilitation Program payment data was compiled by advocacy organization Environmental Working Group. The subsidies are intended to soften the financial impact on U.S. farmers due to trade conflicts with China, Europe, India, and Japan. The Environmental Working Group ranks Montana 23rd in the nation for federal farm subsidies received. Officials say wheat subsidies of $25.5 million were Montana's largest category of federal relief. The group says states receiving the most money are located in the Midwest. A record number of grizzly bears were killed this year in and around Glacier National Park. It's the second year in a row of record deaths for the threatened species in the area, which is home to more grizzlies than anywhere in the lower 48 states. But there's disagreement over whether 2 years of record bear deaths should raise alarm bells. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton explains.
Independent researchers and conservationists like Mike Bader say the expanding grizzly population in and around the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem is driving bears into high-risk human-populated areas.
And so there's a lot of things that are putting pressure on bears, you know, a lot more recreation, mountain biking, I mean, on and on. And
Bader argues that the grizzly population here at least needs to double before removing them from the endangered species list. 94 bears have died since 2018, making the last 2 years record-breaking. That number hasn't reached 34 in a single year in over a decade. Bader says that's concerning.
Because you have to be worried that it could become the new normal, unless it's curbed. And if it becomes the new normal, we're going in reverse.
Many of the recent deaths are bears getting hit by cars and trains or being euthanized after killing livestock. Another 8 have been moved to other ecosystems or sent to zoos by wildlife managers. But rancher Kristen Kipp, who lives on the Blackfeet Reservation, says there are still more than enough bears.
The population of the grizzlies here in this area, they are definitely recovered. The numbers will say that.
State and federal wildlife agencies estimate there are nearly 1,050 grizzlies in the NCDE, 36% more than 2004. Kipp says bears are moving out of the Rocky Mountains onto the eastern plains where she lives.
My almost four-year-old, when she was a baby, the sound of her crying brought in a grizzly 10 feet from my house.
It's not just human safety that's an issue. Ranchers like Kipp point to bears killing more and more livestock as another reason for removing the population from the endangered species list. Montana U.S. Congressman Greg Gianforte agrees. He says delisting would allow state wildlife officials to more aggressively manage grizzlies. As part of that push, Gianforte brought U.S. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt out to Montana in October.
We did see a bear on the way back, too. A sow and a cub, 2 miles out of town.
He wanted Bernhardt to hear firsthand from locals calling for the bears to be delisted. Bernhardt said that management practices should be changed regardless of grizzlies' endangered species status.
We have some immediate challenges that we need to think about that are different today than they were even just a few years ago, and our thinking probably needs to reflect that.
The Interior Department's efforts to remove Yellowstone grizzlies from the endangered species list have been tied up in federal court since 2017. Bernhardt said efforts to delist NCDE bears are still moving forward, despite the litigation. Some bear biologists outside the federal government say there still aren't enough bears to delist now. State management, they worry, would lead to more bears being killed, including trophy hunts. They point to the spike in grizzly mortalities over the past 2 years as another reason not to delist grizzlies in the NCDE. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks bear biologist Cecily Costello says the deaths are a sign that younger grizzlies are seeking out habitat in more populated areas in order to avoid older grizzlies with established home ranges in the core of the ecosystem.
The population itself is increasing over time, and if you look at mortality as a proportion of that population, you would expect it to increase.
She contends that delisting wouldn't increase grizzly mortalities, human-caused or otherwise.
The job, regardless of their of their status is always trying to reduce conflict, minimize human-caused mortality so that it's not adversely affecting their population.
And Costello isn't ready to call the spike in grizzly deaths a trend after 2 years. But even if it is, she says those numbers are sustainable. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.